Welcome to the Independent Artist Podcast, sponsored by the National Association of Independent Artists.
Also sponsored by Zapplication. I'm Will Armstrong, and I'm a mixed media artist.
I'm Douglas Sigworth, glassblower. Join us as we explore the topics that affect the lives and livelihoods of art show artists. All right, everyone, we are back. The 4th of July just happened. Will, how are you?
I'm doing great, Douglas. It's nice to see you here on the podcast once again. And it's fun to get back here in our little makeshift studios. It's fun to get back in our little makeshift studios and get back on track.
Maybe you got a makeshift studio there, Will Armstrong.
I got to make some serious shit, Douglas. I am out of work. Got a big fall coming up, and I don't have much in the larder, if you will.
I don't know about you, but I rarely am at home for the 4th of July.
And yeah, me too. There's usually a show that weekend.
And our neighbors, they blew some shit up this weekend. I mean, it was crazy, the fireworks around here.
Like professional displays. We were looking out across the lake from where we are here in Pickerel Lake, and I could see these people. It looked like an inferno from the other side of the dock. You could see just this red just from where the fire was erupting. So it was insane.
Our neighbors always do kind of this, and this is just the end of our driveway kind of thing on the cul-de-sac. They always do this kind of thing you drive, you know, across the city for, sit in front of a river and watch.
Yeah.
This year they went all out. They went like double. And they were saying they were actually having a hard time getting a hold of some of these fireworks because across the board, people were doing the same thing.
Yeah, everything seems to be times two this year, Douglas, whether it's art shows or fireworks. Everybody seems to be losing it, whether it's, oh, I'll have four beers. Now people are having eight. It's just making up for lost time.
I'm still laughing about what you said at Old Town about the girls are breaking their heels at 9 a.m. and vomiting.
Definitely. Yeah, they were losing their minds. I just feel like everyone has kind of forgotten how to act, and they want to turn it up to 10 because to make up for lost time.
Right. Turbo drive. Hey, Will, speaking of fireworks, did you see the notification yesterday from Uptown?
You know, I did catch something towards the late afternoon. That was a show you were counting on, wasn't it, Douglas?
Well, we do it every year. It's a local one. Mm-hmm. But we chose this year not to sign up for it and kind of do Park City because of what's going on around here. About a month ago, I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast, but I had gone to Uptown. Renee and I went out for a lunch date, and we're like, oh my God, Uptown's coming back. It looks nice. There's construction going on.
Yeah.
Well, we were right in the middle of that whole, the ramp shooting that happened. And since that day, there have been protests almost every day. It has been a real volatile sight again.
It's heartbreaking. I love that area. I married into a Minnesota family, so that area is kind of special to me, too. I know it's probably a lot more special to you, but man,
yeah.
That is a huge bummer. Did they say that was the reason, or are we reading between the lines here?
No, it is for sure. That was part of the press announcement. It's all over the news around here that due to the volatile situations in Uptown, they tried to come up with a plan B. They talked about moving it to a different neighborhood, but Hennepin and Lake, Hennepin and Lagoon intersections have just been every night stuff's going on, and they just couldn't, you know, a month away, they couldn't plan for an event like that, bringing that many people to town.
Yeah, I totally understand that. And I'll play the devil's advocate a little bit from, you know, from the art show's perspective. It's a bummer, and we can't have the thing. From the white privilege perspective, I'm kind of like, you know, there is a lot that needs to be fixed in Minnesota right now, in Minneapolis,
and right.
And that's ground zero for a lot of the different things that are going on, and until they address some of the issues, then we're not going to be able to have nice things.
Yeah, damn it, we can't have nice things.
We can't. So, heartbreaker.
At our open house we had a couple weeks ago, we had a lot of our collectors who come to see us at Uptown, and I asked them, would you be going to Uptown this year? Not one of them said yes. They said, I really hate to say no, but I don't want to take the risk. So, I mean, even if nothing would have happened, I think attendance of art buyers would have been down.
It's a smart move. Can't see my collectors wanting to come out to that either, Douglas.
Yeah. Hey, on another note, a positive note, actually, I saw the announcement from Coconut Grove last week that they are going full steam ahead. They're in planning mode for 2022. And they've hired somebody that we all know and love to take over the artist relations. Camille Marchez is going to be the new artist relations
manager. Oh, no way. That's fantastic. Yeah. From Winter Park.
That's right.
So Camille is taking her talents down to Miami. When I blew out my Achilles and had to deal with artist relations with Winter Park, I cannot tell you how easy it was to deal with her. She was kind and empathetic and really giving. So I'm excited. If it's not just artist relations, just any of her talents and having her around Coconut Grove to give them a shot in the arm is good news for all of us.
That is. They wrote in their publication out to the artists that they are taking kind of a new approach. They wanted to take a look at the festival as a whole, find out where they can improve. And one of the things that they want to improve in is our artist experience and have it not just be that big street festival that it's turned into. They want to make sure that artists are happy and artists are making sales. And that is really a step in the right direction again.
Yeah, that's huge. I know that a lot of artists think that there used to be a big boat show that happened right down there. And when they moved to the boat show, it pulled a lot of the money out of there. I think Miami can handle a show without a boat show. I don't think it necessarily has to be the same crowd. So getting art buyers excited again, they certainly get excited for Art Basel. So why not another art festival? So fantastic news. Congratulations, Camille. We're excited to see what you do.
That's great. Awesome.
Yeah. Speaking of that, I just had a successful Des Moines festival. I think a lot of people had really good shows there in Iowa. And I think, again, it had something to do with the fact that people have been cooped up for so long. So
was the attendance really high?
You know, it was really down in 2019 because of the heat. That was the year that we had the 110 plus heat index or whatever it was, 117. I mean, I don't know. It seemed like people were back out in force.
Cool.
And it's always a well-attended festival. I know that they struggled for a minute with their musical lineup. Ian No, Americana artist that I love, they had on, and I was excited to see or to hear him from Over the Hill. But he had to cancel last minute because of an illness. They were able to get John Prine's son to come in.
Cool.
I mean, that's a heck of a backup. He's right. Got a pedigree like nobody else. But it was a big time, big entertainment.
Well, how did you handle those hours? My God, I'm thinking about going to Ann Arbor next week, and I'm just trying to get myself set up for the 10, 11-hour days on the street.
You know, I look at it. I've had conversations with people. I don't love it. Honestly, I don't love it when the show goes till 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. I do look at it this way. I am on the street from, I get there early when my wife sets up her jewelry. So I'm on the street. Show opens at 11. I'm there at 9:30, just kind of hanging out. So it's from 9:30 till 10:30 because maybe 10:45, because by the time she's done with her last jewelry client, you know, starts breaking down at 10, it takes her another 45 minutes to an hour to break down.
We're kind of the same way as glass blowers. You know, we've that 45 minutes to an hour before showtime. We got to pull the glass out of the container, put the glass back in the container at the end. So we're always the last dogs with the jewelers.
So I just look at it as I'm there from 11 o'clock. I have two kind of waves of the show. I'm there from 11 o'clock till 10 o'clock, but I'm there from 11 to probably, I don't know, 7 for me. I'm working for myself. And from 7 to 10, I'm working for the show. So it's it's the price of admission. If you want to be with Des Moines, you have to suck it up and work for the show for a few hours too. And yeah, it's grueling and it's hard, but that's what they're asking us to do. And I don't do well from 9 to 10. I don't typically make any sales from 9 to 10. Sometimes it's even 8 to 10, though I do find that 8 to 9 hour can be a sweet spot for some people. So I don't mind, like sometimes I've said this before too, but I'll go to a show and you realize halfway through that it's not your market. And you're not going to make that much money. And you're like, well, I took a chance on this show and it's not for me. Sometimes I feel like I'm working for other people. You know, I'm going to be open and the jeweler next to me might be kicking ass. And I'm like, well, I'm taking one this weekend and that's fine. Mm-hmm. It'll be my turn for them to watch me kick ass next weekend. So you kind of, I don't know, I keep a pretty positive attitude.
Yeah, you have to. You have to, because it changes on a dime.
Yeah. And, you know, Stephen King runs one of the top run shows in the country. I love his group. Again, Sean Masters, my buddy who works there on the street, who is, has managed our he actually listens to the podcast. He only takes one dip at the well all year long. He's got one arts festival that he works for. He volunteers there. And so, Sean, congratulations on your new baby. Thanks for checking us out. And thanks for everything you did to keep the wheels on DMAF.
Well, I think about what you said about being there for us and then being there for the show. Next week, I have an interview with Cindy Lyric, and she talks about when she worked at the Uptown Association and in St. Louis, the pressure from the merchants for the show to go later, because that's when they make their money. That's when they've got, you know, dinner rush and the stores and whatnot. So, you know, she wanted to make it, these shows more reasonable hours for artists because, you know, we have to be there and we have to get up and do it again and get up and do it again. But when the overall budget is being considered, we really do have to be there for them for the whole event to work.
I do think, honestly, that if they unleashed the amount of artists that they have there on the shows, plus spouses, plus kids sometimes on the town, that we would match it if we were free to go out there and eat and drink and run up bar tabs.
Oh, there is that. Yeah.
But, you know, it can't really compete, I guess, with the amount that the public brings to the table. So I don't know. Sometimes you work for the show. Sometimes you're the windshield. Sometimes you're the bug. Yeah.
Hey, what about in Fort Worth, you know, at 8 o'clock when they say, you know, artists, you can be done. We're going to have activities going on after. You can stay open if you want. And it always feels like I'm zipping up my tent when the action's starting to happen. Not the sales are starting to happen, when the action is starting to happen.
I don't know. I typically crush it between 8 and 9 when everybody, but there's this funny, I feel like there's this funny witching hour at Fort Worth that happens. Okay. That's like, I will stay open until 9, but if you stay up open after 9, then you're one of the only people on the streets, and then you are the light bulb in the middle of a Minnesota cornfield at midnight. I mean, the people, the drunks, the mosquitoes are out. So you have to be prepared and steel yourself. But if you have things that walk away, you know, some giftables or smaller items that are super impulsy that might flow with an extra glass of craft beer.
There you go.
Or two, you get socially lubricated. You can have a lot of your work walking out there and some happy pockets.
We've had too many close calls with drunks knocking over displays of glass. We're like, we're not even worth risking it. We zip it up and we get some sleep.
Yeah, I do find a lot of people zip up in Fort Worth to more people than you see at a typical arts festival. Mm-hmm. But it's up to, you know, I like the fact that it's your prerogative. But I also like the fact that sometimes we're, like I said, sometimes we're working for the show and sometimes the show is working for us.
Hey, I don't know about you. I mean, you've already gone out there and done a couple of shows. I haven't. I'm getting ready to leave for Ann Arbor next week. And if it isn't just like Murphy's Law, we finally have the inspiration for a whole new body of work to start working on. And we're going to have to interrupt it and just hit the road.
That's a tough one, Douglas. I found the same thing. Between Old Town and Des Moines, I had this kind of epiphany in the studio. I was being more productive. I could actually, I could stand again. I got a boot on my foot. I got out of the cast and I was working in the studio.
That Very is so exciting. Exciting. Yeah.
But I just was crushing it in the studio. I was doing long hours. I was making what I consider great work. I was really happy with what was happening. I was creative and firing on everything. And you have to look at what that does to your bottom line, like Des Moines, while a good show. What if I was able to carry that productivity all the way through the weekend? You know, what if I stayed home? And I felt committed to the show at that point. I didn't want to do it, but I'm like, man, the work I'm making could carry me through the fall, like right now.
So if only had our crystal balls in front of us that knew how to time those things, but we just can't. We have to juggle it.
Yeah.
The thing that we've been dealing with is we've been wanting to create bigger work that we can start getting a bigger return on because we know there's a market for that. And as glass blowers, we can't physically blow a piece that's big enough to fill some of these insane niches or wall pieces. after talking to my interview with Kina, it gave us some ideas for some pieces for the wall that we're super excited about. And we just want to like start working on it and see what happens with it and experiment and try and evolve and have it grow. And now we're going to hit the road and do these run of shows.
Sometimes you've got lightning in a bottle in the studio and it's tough to turn your back on it and hit the road. I mean, Des Moines, again, had a great weekend, but do I still feel the repercussions of that weekend because of the long hours and being on this dead leg of mine? Yeah, I've still got a week-long hangover that stretched all the way into the 4th of July weekend that is always a big one with my family. So yeah, it's a challenge, but that is one of the things that you have to look at when you're formulating your year-long schedule. And that's one of the things that I talked about to Daryl Thetford this week on the podcast.
It's really interesting how it's almost like a scientist. He maps out, this is what happens here and this is what happens there with his experiences, and he plans things out. And it almost feels like as artists that we are obligated to take every great opportunity that comes our way and make the most of it. And he does such a good job of having the pros and cons list and really knowing when to say no.
You know, Georgia O'Keeffe had a good line about saying no, too. She was one of the people, a huge proponent for saying no about certain things. And she obviously had more opportunities than a lot of us do. But to kind of lean into the zen of Daryl Thetford, it helps me to always just talk to him at shows. And he's got some good insight as far as that goes. I really appreciate the way he approaches a season. And I think a lot of us at the end of last year, that has been a common denominator in a lot of the different talks from Clifton to
Chris Dahlquist.
Yeah, from Clifton to Chris Dahlquist. They don't want to work as hard, or they don't want to do as many shows. And we can make that happen.
Or having that balance of saying, we don't need to do this just because we've always done it this way. You know, even like David Bjurstrom says, you know what? Look at the bottom line. After all this effort, multiple shows, multiple expenses versus the other side of it, and come out with the same result with being a little kinder to yourself and having a creative time to make really stellar work.
Absolutely. You always have to look at your bottom line, and sometimes your bottom line is your physical well-being.
Right. Well, I'm really excited for everyone to hear what you and Daryl talked about.
I am too. It's a really nice, kind of relaxing, for me anyway, cup of coffee conversation that we had.
But before we do that, we have a message from our sponsor this week, Zapplication.
This podcast has taken on a life of its own, and it's grown a little bit further than you and I could manage financially ourselves, so we're proud to be able to keep it going with a little bit of sponsorship this week.
That's great. Zapplication came on board and really likes what we're doing and supports what we're doing and wanted to throw some money our way and sponsor some episodes. This episode of the Independent Artist Podcast is brought to you by Zap, the digital application service where artists and art festivals connect.
Douglas, I'm thrilled this week that we are being sponsored and supported by Zapplication.org.
It's great that they appreciate what we're doing.
And I appreciate what they are doing, basically because I feel like I'm an intensely lazy man. And they make the entire art show process, signing up for shows, a lot easier.
You know, they just added that tagging feature so that we can mark what shows we're trying to build that perfect tour. We can keep an eye on when the deadlines are to make sure that we kind of line our shows up the way we want them to go.
Or you can write whatever you want on it. You can write, hey, this show sucked last year, but it had promise. It's going to be exactly what you need it to be. And I appreciate that extra bonus feature.
Yeah.
Douglas, today we are excited to welcome Daryl Thetford to the Independent Artist Podcast. Daryl was one of the first digital artists on the circuit. His work has been described as graphic, modern, pop, and contemporary. He's one of the mainstays in our industry. You've seen him as a participant and an award winner at some of the very top shows in the country. Daryl, welcome. Daryl, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you sitting down and giving me a little bit of time with the podcast. It's been a crazy year and a half. You and I haven't done a show since, I guess, Gasparilla. Well, I did Old Town last weekend, but I hadn't done a show since Gasparilla before that. So
Yeah. For me, it was La Quinta, and in Palm Desert last March. It was March 2019. It's funny, right? When you miss a year of doing stuff, suddenly I'm going, last year, no, the year before last. Which is so strange.
So I guess 2020, right? So right before everything kind of went to hell.
That's right.
But you guys were out in La Quinta. Is that before Scottsdale or after? Because my wife went out to Scottsdale and they yanked the rug right out. Like
I think that was the week before. Because yeah, we were in the desert having an amazing show, and there was kind of talk of, you know, this virus coming to the U.S. and it, you know, maybe there are some cases in Seattle, and there was some talk that maybe there's some in California, but you know, we were in Palm Springs area in California, and suddenly on Saturday they announced that there were multiple cases in the desert where we were, and there was kind of complete panic after that. And they didn't close the show. They weren't closing things at that time. They weren't closing restaurants. But the next day it was just a ghost town on that Sunday, and then the next day, I guess, really let us know that this is a serious thing. Is they closed the Indian Wells tennis tournament, which is a huge, huge event.
Oh, yeah.
And then on the way home, all of the U.S. is closing down as we were driving across. We had done this side trip to Marfa, Texas. You know, Rishavinko and I were sitting and having dinner, and they announced they're closing the NBA. And it's like, what? I mean, you know, that was just so shocking.
I was sitting on a beach in Mexico with my wife, and we're kind of watching and like we're reading our books and we're having a good time and just looking at the world kind of burning. We're like, I wonder if we can extend this vacation by the rest of our lives. Just stay down here, you know. We did add a couple of extra days, but in hindsight, we should have added a month. I mean, it was just
or two.
Yeah, seriously, it was. But that in Mexico, you could buy hand sanitizer. I'm not totally sure that it wasn't tiny little bottles of tequila, but that you could still buy it. You mentioned the Grishchenkos. I just saw those guys last weekend, and to me, like Signe and Genna are. Like they're super put together. They know, you know, they're kind of who I want to be when I grow up.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got it going on. But I remember early on, you had given me a piece of advice or you'd said something to them. I don't remember what little pearl you dropped on them, but they were like, yep. Signe was like, yep, WWDTD. What would Daryl Thetford do? That's how we run our business.
It's the other way around now. What would Signe and Genna do? Yeah, he'll just walk in my booth and just shake his head like, you know, so much out of line, so much not together. Because their booth is always so
It is perfect, but you've got, I don't know, they've got two of them. They're definitely put together, and they were rocking last weekend in Old Town. It was great to see them. Really great. So with those guys, you're very close friends with them. And I mean, one of the things that I think that I kind of wanted to talk to you about is the fact that like it was Bayou City. It's laid out. It's the Memorial Park show, and it's kind of laid out like a lollipop. You walk down the stick, and then you walk around the whole big show. And you and I were right across the street from each other in two of what I would say the best spots in the show. Like, you can see me as soon as you pay for your ticket. You can see you across the street. And you were having a great weekend, and I was just sitting in my chair. And I don't know if you remember that or not, but you came over and you're like, well, what's going on? Because I was not having a great weekend, and here I am in this plum spot. Do you remember that at all?
Sort of, yeah. I don't remember. If you're going to what did I say?
I'll lead you in, but you were like, oh, you kind of were kicking my tires a little bit. And you're like, well, what, you know, what have you been up to? And this was like, Bayou was like my fifth show in a row. And well, it was my fourth show in five weekends, and the only weekend I'd had off, I'd helped my wife sell at Jazz Fest. And you were like, that's, you know, I mean, I don't remember, like, what would your advice?
I do remember now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so counterintuitive, but, you know, back when I did photography, for several years, I did 25, 26 shows, and which was horrible. Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of people still do that, but it's just, that was not for me, but I was excited and new and frankly just had to do it to make money.
Right.
At that stage. And at some point I began doing different work and doing the digital work. I began working bigger, but also began just like, I can't do 25 shows. So I cut down to 16.
Right.
And I realized I made just as much money doing 16 as I did make 25 because I was more prepared. I was fresher. I was fresher for the audience.
Yeah.
And then I was, my work was fresher. And then I cut it down to 9 shows. Dolan Diamond and I were sitting in Denver in a restaurant. And I said, I remember once I'm on the 13. He goes, I will too. and so we kind of made that commitment. I think I didn't get into a couple. And I ended up canceling 2 and I did 9. And I did just as much doing 9 as I did doing 16.
Doing 16.
And because I just, again, it was the same thing. I was fully stocked. I'd been putting a lot of work in. I was fresh. I could talk to customers. I don't sit down. I walk and pace and talk.
Right.
And engage the whole time. I mean,
yeah.
And that's, but it's hard to do that if you're doing 16 or much less 25 shows.
Yeah, it's impossible to do. I remember meeting you when you were doing photography, and I don't think, I couldn't read the 25 shows on you, but you could definitely read it on me when I was just plopped down in my chair. But typically, I'm doing that walk around. And do you do, you kind of have a double booth, so you have a lot of room to walk around.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, Michael McKee, who a lot of people will know, Michael's been a poster artist for a lot of shows.
Well, he's the mayor of Art Town, right?
Absolutely. So always does great and has a beautiful presentation. But Michael, before I went to a double booth, he was absolutely rocking. He was kind of a king.
Yeah.
And would just sell so many pieces. And one day I saw that he had a double booth. I said, I'm sorry, Michael, are you not selling enough out of a single booth? What is this? You know? And he said, well, I've almost doubled my sales. And it's like, okay, let's try that. The first time I did it was at Houston, several years before you and I had that conversation. I had done, I guess, Bayou City for 7 or 8 years. And I showed up with a double booth. And I doubled the best show I'd ever had at Bayou City and must have had 1,000 people ask it in my first year.
Amazing.
And so it really gives that visibility because it just takes a second for somebody to look down at their watch or turn away for a moment to miss your booth if you have a single booth. They don't miss it. They might like it. They don't miss it.
I've measured it before. It's like it's a pace and a half, I think, or 2.5 paces. Where it like, so again, like you get a text, you miss the booth. A 10-foot booth is 2.5 paces. So, plus you can see it from far away. You just make a bigger presence. Plus, to me, and I haven't done as many doubles as I probably should. But I'll do a double, and I feel like it's kind of like people think you're maybe a little bit better. You know, it's a little bit like I went tall and I did twice the amount. Like I have a huge imposing wooden booth now. It's like really tall and, you know, it kind of makes a presence and I feel like it looks good. But
absolutely. Oh, well, the tall booth for me, it's funny. So we had a brief experiment in doing tall booths. My wife used to do art festivals and we set up a tall booth for her and a tall booth for me, side by side. First time we'd done it, and it took forever because you're working on ladders.
Oh, yeah.
So that was our first night. That's when those 110-mile-an-hour straight-line winds hit the show. We were at a hotel, thankfully.
Was this – which show was this? Was that Austin?
It was Austin.
Yeah, I was there.
And we found pieces of our booth 2 blocks away. Oh, I mean, it was just – it just they were gone. I mean, they were completely gone. And so the show came by and set up a tent for us, and we found like 4 pro panels and propped up some art.
Oh my God.
That was our last setup tall.
Oh my God. Yeah, I stick with the tall, but I remember being at that Austin show and it was like the show breathed. You know, it was like it was all kind of blowing in one direction.
Yeah.
They were like, oh yeah, you think you're all braced against that wind? And then it just sucked the other direction and everything. I had to pull my craft hut. It was the only reason it wasn't in Kansas with yours because it was stuck to a stop sign. It just wrapped the entire thing, just wrapped around the stop sign. But man, that was a scary one. Hey, I want to go back and talk a little bit. You talked about being a photographer and doing that many shows, but I wanted to talk about kind of the courage that it takes or what kind of spurred you into dropping a body of work that I really you know, I loved that kind of honky tonk series and the juke joints, and I loved that series. But I kind of want to talk about what went into changing that and dropping that body of work and moving into something else.
I think the short answer is Eric Lee.
Okay.
So I had spent 8 months in the Delta shooting those juke joints and talking my way into places, and some got some really good reception and got some really bad reception at times. But overall, you know, really, really put some real effort into going back and forth to Delta and shooting these places and setting up a tripod for really long exposures. Most of them are really dark.
Yeah.
And so shooting inside where the lights are so low. And so I put all that effort in during, you know, awards and stuff like that. But I would literally hear this all day. Wow, these are amazing. I would never hang this on my wall. And it was like, okay. I must be on the wrong track here. No one would ever hang this on my wall. And I ended up just selling prints of other things, of previous bodies of work. Yeah. Out of the map then. I mean, that's all I was doing. Eric Lee, meanwhile, was having his first Bayou City show. And he pretty well sold out by Saturday afternoon.
Yeah. Is this when he was doing a double booth with a couch in it? And
that's right.
Yeah. Oh, my God. He'd make a whole, like, yeah, it looked like his booth looked like something out of Architectural Digest.
That's just right. So, you know, I had already started experimenting with digital collage. I really didn't know how it would be received. No one was doing digital work on the art fair circuit at all.
Yeah.
And so I put one piece together and I brought it, but it didn't fit in with the juke joint series. So I never had it home. So, you know, the last hour of the show, I thought, what the heck? I'm just going to prop it up against the front of the booth. Well, I had two people fighting for it immediately. And I thought, well, okay, this has marketability. And I really, really enjoyed doing it. And my wife was a painter, and she didn't want me to be a painter and competing with her in the same category. Right. So painting had been my first choice, but I had gone into photography as a second choice.
Sure.
And the digital collaging I was doing felt very much like painting to me. And they looked a lot more like painting. People didn't quite know what they were.
Right.
And of course, there was no digital category at all. And so I would apply in photography because they were my photographs. They weren't things off the internet. They were my photographs pieced together, sometimes 100 pieces at a time. But they looked like a silkscreen. And directors would call and say, "Girl, you've mistakenly applied as a photographer. These are photographs, and here's why. You don't want me applying mixed media because it's not really mixed media. That's not really..." Right. So anyway, that's kind of how it all happened.
That's amazing. I mean, it's similar to just, you know, once you jury into a show, then you have to kind of, you know, you have the one piece that sells, and then it's the down that track. Now, all of a sudden I'm on this train track, and it's like, okay, now I have to get this body of work together because I juried into, I mean, was that Houston again, like getting into that first,
you know, kind of big show? Gosh, what was the first show? Might have been Old Town. Might have been my first show with the digital work. And and Joan kind of dropped me a note and said, "I'm not sure about this."
Uh-huh.
And we had a conversation. She goes, "Okay, we'll bring it." It worked out, and I was there for years after that.
So. Well, you were way ahead of the curve. I mean, now digital is a category. I remember talking to you years ago about having a little bit of trouble with juries because getting in is a huge problem. You have to get in order
to. You have to get in. That's the ticket. I mean, well, it's a funny thing because once I was doing it, I juried into everything because no one else, absolutely no one else was doing it.
Right.
And so it was unique just because it existed and no one else was applying.
Yeah.
And then some other people started applying in digital. But again, for years, it's just such a very, very weak category. I mean, there might have been four of us applying in digital to the point that directors are questioning whether they should even keep the category. And I think a couple of people, like St. Louis, eliminated it for a while. And so when I talked to Cindy Lyric, who was over the show at the time, I said, "Well, based on all your criteria, I can't apply in photography and Canon apply mixed media and you have no digital category, there was simply no place for me to apply. And then I think
I
kind of realized that was leaving a lot of people out, and then went to a 2D category.
Yeah. That seemed to be the kind of the Des Moines method. They were one of the ones that started that. And do you like that? Just going 2D to,
You know, I don't, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I've been on several juries, and it's funny because how, you know, I think we read as artists applying, we read all this stuff into what does this mean? Did they not like the artist statement? Did they not think this fit in the category? But yeah, I've been on at least five juries of really good shows, and we've never had that conversation. It's always just a, do you like it or do you not? Do you think it works well or do you not? You know, and that's really the extent of it. And most people I know, and I know people don't like this, but most people I know, given either a 1 or a 7,
sure,
really a up or down both, even though you occasionally have a 3 or a 5, but you look at shows like Cherry Creek and during 2,400 applications. I mean, you're going through the nuance and go through that about 4 rounds. You just start going, that's a 7, that's a 1, that's a 7.
Yeah, you know, without having to actually break down the category. It's like, who really cares? Yeah. You know, you're trying to put together a balanced show. And at the end of the day, you're doing that. And you also just want to put in what you like. So,
yeah, I find we weren't looking at, oh, how many mixed media artists we have, or how many digital. It's just however it felt, you know, the way it was.
Do you find that that's hard to talk with people that aren't art show artists on juries? Is that a difficult thing?
There's a lot of discussion about what's what, and obviously they're blind juries, but if Will Armstrong's work comes up, I know what it looks like, you know, and so, you know, maybe the conversation then is if somebody's not voting for it or no one's voting for it or whatever, because they don't know if they haven't seen it in person and, you know, it's just the slides, then maybe you do stop and say, let me at least explain what this is. Explain what's happening. You know, sometimes that's effective in helping sway a jury member, and sometimes it's not.
Right.
But you do have a lot of conversations. I found, I guess there are 2 festival artists and 3 non-festival people on the jury.
Yeah.
And on that particular jury. And you know, there's just a lot of conversation about what things are and how things read on a slide versus in person.
I remember talking to Aaron Hackenberg about that, and he was talking about being in a room with these people. He was like, well, 2 of them I know, and then there are, it wasn't Cherry Creek, but it was one of the big ones. I don't remember which one it was, but he was like, well, I'm sitting in a room and I've got these people that don't know me, and I want them to listen to what I'm saying. And if they think somebody is a 1, I'm not going to sway them. So why even waste my vote and lose my credibility by giving them a 7? Or I mean, like, I could give them a 7, but I'm not going to change them from a 1 to an in the show. Like those people, like there are 4 people that are already giving this person a 1. There's no way I can sway them over. And so I might save my argument. Like I can give them a vote, and I'm not going to downplay them, but I'm like, I may not have anything to go to bat for them. Like there's no wiggle room.
There are 2 or 3 people who didn't get in the show at least that I went, how could I have gotten them in? I mean, it's frustrating because, you know, people look at you and they go, well, he was on the jury. I saw it. and Daryl didn't let me in. It's
like, nah.
Yeah, no, I was not the only vote here. But
right. I don't know. I feel like listening to Aaron talk about that and kind of break it down, it's like, well, I don't know. You kind of have to put hurt feelings or whatever aside. I don't know. It made it make a little bit more sense to me, and maybe be a little bit more zen about the entire process. And
well, I think you take it a lot less personally when you sit on a jury because you see things that don't get on a show.
Right.
Not because they're not quality work or well made.
Sure.
Just because, gee, we've already seen 4 of these.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, well, that's not their fault.
Right.
But that was part of the factor. It's like, oh, I don't like the use of blues. And,
right.
And so that was that juror's opinion. Or I don't like horses. So, you know, and they're doing horse art. I mean, right. It's really, it can come down to that too.
Yeah.
I feel like generally the really solid quality work with a beautiful display has a tremendous shot of getting in. But ultimately, it can easily not be juried in too, and not because of the quality.
Right. I mean, you're also kind of talking about, like, you know, the best of the best. You got 180 spots and 1,500 people apply, and 450 to 500 people have a shot, you know, yeah. Like, you can easily cut the fat. I was going to ask, like, as far as like cutting your shows down to 9, if you get that run, that typically it's a June run, but if you get that Old Town, Lakefront, Des Moines, Cherry Creek, a lot of people feel like, oh, I've got to do it. I've got to just go and do the whole run. How do you feel about that? Like, how do you put together a schedule of 9 shows?
Well, it's changed over the years.
Yeah.
Fortunately for me, Lakefront never was a good show for me. I know a lot of people love the show. It's a beautifully run show.
Right.
It just, not my customer.
Yeah, I've heard that that's a killer show for like 3D, but I don't know. People
I think you're right. And some paintings, but for me, it was never my audience, so I wasn't concerned. You know, I did Old Town, Des Moines, and Cherry Creek for years, and finally dropped Des Moines, as much as I hated to. I love the show. I love the director. I always had a great reception there. But I would just crawl to Cherry Creek, just so exhausted. And my inventory is depleted. I'm exhausted. And I go, okay, I probably took at least a third of what I would have done at Cherry Creek away by doing Des Moines.
Right.
And at some point it's like, well, how much am I really making at Des Moines if I added that third from Cherry Creek? And so that was kind of my decision, that I felt like I was losing enough at Cherry Creek that I would make up a lot of what I'm losing at Des Moines if I dropped it at Cherry Creek, because I'd be fresh and have a full body of work.
That's what I felt about Sausalito too. Like, I mean, some people loved that Sausalito show, but I drove all the way out there from Virginia at the time and then had to do the Cannonball Run back to St. Louis. And as I was doing St. Louis, I'm like, and I had a decent show at Sausalito, but obviously I'm exhausted from the drive. Right. I had to drive through fires in the Sierra Nevadas. And I mean, it was just a nightmare. Like, I'd planned on going hiking in the Sierra Nevadas, but they were on fire. So instead I went to the brewery. So not exactly, still fun, not the health kick that I needed, but
exactly.
I don't know. I got to St. Louis. I'm like, there is nothing in my booth at the end of the show that I sold at Sausalito that I could not have sold at St. Louis. I'm like, I could have just done one.
Yeah, I think that's the formula for me anyway. And as far as Old Town, after I think 14 years, Old Town decided that I was done there. I didn't actually make that decision, to the best of my knowledge.
Right. They forced you into retirement.
And they said, yeah, you're done here.
It happens.
And of course, the next year they started with the day before setup, not the 4:30 a.m. That was the biggest killer. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, man. So you switched your bodies of work. You say no to a lot of shows that a lot of people would kill to get into. How are you dealing with that in September? I imagine your September is chock full.
It is, yeah. I'm just doing as much work as I can do.
Okay.
You know, right now, trying to have a crazy amount of work before I start the first show.
Gotcha.
I don't have much time between shows. So with the Park City, Sun Valley, and Cherry Creek, more or less in a row. Mm-hmm. And Cherry Creek always being my top show of the year. I mean, I'm really doing a lot of work.
Right. Are you worried about like the rest of September too? Because that's more of an August run, culminating in Labor Day. Like the rest of like September, are you just going to do those three? Or
I think I don't have 9 shows this year. I think okay. I've got Bayou City in October and La Quinta in November.
Right,
and that's it.
Okay,
so that's my whole schedule this year. I guess those 5 shows.
Yeah.
And thought about it.
So this is my dilemma is I've got that same run that you've got, that Park City, Sun Valley, Cherry Creek. Like, what do you cut? It's all steak. You know, there's no fat on this meat.
Yeah. It's such a bizarre year, the way it's mm-hmm. all done. And I mean, part of it is, can you really do enough work?
Right.
And if you can, given this short one time, you say, I can fuck up and do it for one time.
Right.
Get a driver to drive to Cherry Creek or back. Or
yeah.
You say, you know, one way to save energy. Right. So if you decide to do them, get a driver to drive to one or two of the shows. And you fly there and save a lot of energy. That
right. I love that. Flying and driving, just ditching the vehicle at long-term parking. The trick that I found with that is to go get an expensive oil change at the dealer, because then they lock it up and we're like, well, I'm not coming back for 2 weeks. So they've got security. They lock your truck up for 2 weeks and you come back in. So, and a lot of times those big time dealers, it might've cost me $120 for an oil change, but I didn't have to pay for parking and they have a shuttle that'll take me to the airport. But yeah, I'll do that. And I did that until they left my truck at like a cheapo parking. They basically sawed out my catalytic converter underneath my truck because it was lined like those big trucks. They're lined with the part is lined with platinum. And so that kind of put a little hiccup in my plan.
You know, I think a lot of people think flying back and forth and things like that is very extravagant. I always did when I hear people were doing it. You look at the numbers and you go, not only is it physically better for you, but if you look at the numbers, plane ticket, round trip plane ticket is a lot cheaper than several nights in a hotel and
you
need to drive back and forth. So it ends up being financially smart too.
Right. Plus the wear and tear on your relationship too. You get home and you're not, you know, you're not burned out from the road. You're actually fresh and you can be a husband again.
Exactly.
Yeah. Jumping into that, Dana used to do shows and now she is seemingly a lot happier not doing shows. And she'd always been a writer, but she's been writing and speaking. You guys seem really good. Like you talked about the competition as far as painting goes and not wanting to step on her toes. But how is that working out for you guys?
She loves writing. It's always been her first love. She used to paint to support her writing, which is very funny.
Yeah.
And I think she, you know, she loved painting, you know, painters, mixed media artists is by far the hardest category, the jury in. And it's, you know, just getting in a show, having an amazing show and not getting in for 2 years. I think that was really stressful. And she just went with a few galleries for a while and then really at some point took the leap and said, I'm just going to be a full-time writer, not a part-time writer.
Right.
And so she writes for a number of magazines and does a lot of freelancing these days. But it's interesting you ask because she just started painting it. And I don't, other than doing a commission or two on occasion for old customers, old clients, she hasn't really painted it. She started again recently and she's about three paintings in and I think really enjoying it.
So that's great.
We'll see. I don't know what she'll do. I think she'll probably pick up some more galleries again. And, do some commission work.
Yeah. Does she travel with you much anymore? Or?
About once a year.
Okay.
Yeah. She. I think she had all the art festivals and art festival cities that she ever wanted. But she'll fly out usually either right before a show for several days. So like right before La Quinta last year, she flew out and we hung out in the desert and saw a bunch of sights and did some hiking. And then the day I set up, she flew out. she said, okay, now the work's beginning, I'm out.
Yeah. Well, you seem to have a healthy, I mean, that's kind of the main theme of the show is kind of becoming your boundaries. Like you guys have pretty healthy boundaries as far as what she wants to do and you do it, you know, the shows that you guys want to do or the shows that you want to do, you're going to do them and have to cut some ones that you still liked, you know, that were profitable.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think at some point, you know, we met when we were both mental health professionals. So we were both working at community mental health, which means forensic testing, competency testing, you name it, all kinds of testing, psychological parameter. I was doing everything from therapy to running a mental health center to whatever. And
is this why I find it so comforting to come into your booth? Go get a little session.
Welcome. You look like you're feeling bad today.
Right.
So anyway, somewhat Mr. Robbins out there.
Yeah.
She started taking pottery classes and she said, I'm going to quit work and become a potter. We met two people who are doing art festival full time.
Yeah.
And they kind of taught us how to do that. And I said, well, I'm going to quit too. She goes, you can't quit. Somebody's got to make money in this house. So so she started doing pottery. And her first show was Magic City in Birmingham.
Okay.
She did $1,400 for them. Wow, this is great. Look at all this money.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a nightmare carrying all that pottery and doing all that. But
right.
Then we, because she was painting pots, we all kind of pushed her into painting because it's like you're painting. You're just painting them three times on little pots and asking a very small amount of money. So she started doing actual paintings and I said, well, I think now it's time for me. No, you can't be a painter. At some point, I quit my job. And I started to use internet book business and sold that business and finally went into the art festival thing I've been putting off for about 6 years.
Did that kind of kickstart you? Or you? I mean, well, I guess that's photography. So you kind of struggled through that for a number of years.
By that time, I was so familiar with festivals and how to do them and how to get in them and how to set up that I'm doing all that with Dana. And I think a lot of people initially kind of saw me as, oh, this is a husband who decided to get in on the business. But it was never that. It was always, I want to be there first, you know, when she did too. But I felt like somebody had to make this income. But we both took this leap of saying, with the assumption that we probably won't make as much money as we did as professionals, but we'll be a lot happier.
Right.
And we made that decision then. And it actually turned out we do better than we did as professionals because we didn't make, I mean, community mental health, we didn't make that much money.
Yeah.
You know, I think it became easier to turn things down. Yeah, initially it was hard. I mean, the ego says, well, I got in these shows. I need to do these shows.
Right. That's what everybody kind of feels, you know?
Yeah, I have my name associated with these shows and begin these shows. You know, at some point you go, okay, well, they're great shows, but I need that time.
Yeah. Let them go. And then, you know, time for you guys too, and time to play golf and time to,
absolutely.
You know, I, when we were texting earlier, I loved this because I had all these questions about you changing, kind of changing streams and saying no to shows. And you were talking about the prep that you had to do that we all have to do to get ready for this run that we're all kind of getting ready to go on. And you were like, yeah, but I'm going to go play golf.
You know, I don't publicize that much. It just sounds so hedonistic.
I mean, it kind of.
It's one of my obsessions. Because when I'm playing golf, I'm not thinking about work. It's one of the few times I'm not thinking about work.
Yeah.
But I mean, you just can't. You just have to focus on that at the time. And so I think that's one reason it's so addictive to me. It's because it's so engages me.
Well, that and being friends with Trey. Yeah, I can imagine that I don't know if Trey plays golf or not, but Trey definitely has that Zen kind of approach of
he does, yeah. I mean, I'll say, are you stressed out? I'm trying to get this many pieces done, and well, no, I haven't restarted yet. It's like, okay. So he goes, I've kind of done it with my studio. I don't really want to paint.
Yeah.
It's all fine.
Yeah. He's done a lot of mural projects over this forced break, this COVID break that we've all been on.
And yeah, they're challenging too, working on ladders. I went down and helped on one of them. And wow, I mean, you're 15 feet on a ladder, painting the side of a wall and hoping you don't fall off. it's not easy stuff.
Yeah, down in that Alabama sunshine too. They don't get too many cool days. I don't know. A lot of us have kind of come to the other side of this past year, and we don't want to work as hard. And I did cut down to like 12. I think this year I'm down to like 8 or 9 shows in the year. But I mean, I do think they're all run together. So we'll see how that runs.
Yeah.
But just kind of the courage to say no. Do you think that mental health background kind of helps you guys with that?
I don't know. I think saying no to... We both have careers and we both have educations that are invested in these careers, and this is all we know. And walking away from that made it easier to walk away from other things in the future. I think it's more that experience of walking away from that professional career we were so invested in.
Yeah.
Really, really kind of allowed us that freedom. Because, I mean, to me, when I was field, not only was I getting burnt out, but I was kind of moving up this management ladder that I guess I thought I wanted to be in, just kind of like, this is what you do. And right. I realized all my people at the next level were missed. And they were unhappy people, and they didn't like their jobs, but they were kind of felt like this is what they needed to do, and for the money or whatever. And that also helped too. So wow, so if I move up, I'm going to be maybe even more unhappy. So why don't we do something completely different? And the two people we knew who were the happiest people we knew were both doing art festivals.
That's amazing.
Dana and I are both in. Artistically inclined and had dabbled with art and design different things for years, but never really done anything serious, you know?
Yeah.
So I tell people my only training, woman who played Jane in a Tarzan, early Tarzan film, was giving painting lessons in her garage near me in Milan, Tennessee. And of course, when I knew her, she was this elderly woman. She was this young, beautiful starlet.
Yeah.
And so it was amazing to find out that she had been like runner up Miss America, and she had been on Broadway and this Tarzan movie, and she were taking little painting lessons in her garage. And I did that's that incredible. When I was 9 and 10. So that was my big art training.
That's incredible. Who were your who were the two artists? Are they still on the circuit that kind of brought you in?
It was actually Lawrence Mathis and his wife.
Okay.
Yeah. So they haven't done them in a number of years. But Lawrence, I didn't understand. I mean, you know, we're going, well, he makes all this money. And it's like, oh, well, he'd been featured artist at like all the top shows in the country, and he was really well known. And so when we started out, we were excited about the 1400 Dana did with her pottery. But we were going, well, that's not at all what he does with his oil paintings at Cherry Creek.
Yeah. It doesn't take long before you walk into somebody's booth and you see the prices they have on their work, and then you see a couple walk away and you're like, okay. I don't know. I find that to be kind of inspiring. Chris Dahlquist was talking about how, you know, these are not our competitors. You know, what can we learn from these folks? And I found that to be really inspiring, as well as that putting away the... I think she called it the golden anchor or something like that. It's like an albatross, like the work that I've made over the years that I don't want to make anymore, and giving me that kind of courage to put it away and be like, look, I don't want to paint that woman in red anymore. You know, if I don't want to.
It's hard. It's become it's a staple of your income. It's hard to say, okay, let's not.
Yeah.
But can it be fun? Always, there's always something that replaces it.
Yeah,
I've gone through it, and I've seen other people go through it. You have a couple of images, or they sell well, some variation of that.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, I don't know. I like that lady in red, but she's going to live in the record store for now. Like, she's not going to go Where's Waldoing it around the country anymore. She's just stuck in the record shop, which is good with me. I like her just there. She's fine. But what else, Daryl? Any other little pearls that I haven't written down in my outline?
Gosh, I don't have an outline on this end.
Well, you weren't expected to. I feel like we covered a lot.
Well, it's interesting. You're talking about doing what you want to do. And I've done a lot of commissions over the years, and a lot of corporate commissions, which are good in some ways. But I'm kind of like you were talking about getting things up. And I'm still going to do them, but differently. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the past, maybe I've talked to someone, you know, they're building and certain things in them. It's very much a dance of what they want, how I can do it, what I want it to look like versus what, and going back and forth. And it's funny, you were talking about Trey earlier. He just won't do it. He'll just say, no, I'll paint a big piece for you that size, but whatever I want to do. And then they can either take it or leave it. And it's a lot of freedom there, too.
Yeah, that is.
I kind of walked out. Most of my clients have been super. I mean, I go with something and they go, oh, that's great. Love it.
Right.
Whatever. But there is a certain amount of not going through something as prescribed. I think
it's
commissions too. It's that I'm beginning to change.
Right. I have a background in illustration, and that saying yes, it's like, well, I have to try to look at my customers as not like that clients that are like, okay, can you do this and this? And because that is the illustration model, and you send them things, and I those things take me so daggone long. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, how many of my own paintings could I make in that period of time? It's like, I should be charging quadruple what this costs.
Well, I always charge, you know, I have a minimum on commissions and I always charge at least double, but it's exactly what you're coming to. Just like you're saying, we're talking about turning down the shows. For every commission, I can usually produce at least five pieces that I could just sell.
Right.
So, you know, is it costing, it might actually be costing me money, even though I'm charging premium.
Yeah, it does. It does cost you money. I've got this one commission that I need to work on that I was rolling on it before I hurt my leg, and now I'm kind of like backlogged on that and trying. But I like to watch baseball in the studio, or I like to listen to it on the radio, and the client is one of the sponsors of the Atlanta Braves who I listen to. So it's kind of constantly in my mind. It's like, this inning sponsored by Northside Hospital. I'm like, oh my God, Northside Hospital, I've got to get to work. But they're wonderful clients, but I definitely, you know, need to get back into that.
How is your leg? How are you setting up the booth?
I'm hiring people. It's been really nice. I've had, for Des Moines, I have a volunteer. Sunday's husband, Brad, is helping me set the booth up. For Old Town, I hired my nephew. He had a summer job that fell through, and I'm like, what are you making a week typically? And he's like that. I'm like, I can handle that. We're going on the road. So I took him. I think he's the only member of my family, extended or otherwise, that actually understands at least half of what we do for a living now. But I don't know. I'm out of the first cast, and then my new doctor here in Minnesota, because we're up here for the summer, he put me right into the boot. So I can't walk yet, but we're getting there. Literally baby steps. We'll see. I'm planning on Des Moines. That's going to put it to the test.
Well, I will set you up at Cherry Creek for 15%.
All right. I'll see what state I'm in. That's out. Yeah, we'll see.
If you want it torn down, that's another 10%.
I understand. It's funny to go from being the type of artist that didn't even really want to help somebody roll their tent sides to needing help doing absolutely everything. So yeah, I've always been empathetic to people that needed help, but at the same time, this has been a kind of a wake up call. I need to be a lot kinder out there on the road.
I'll remember that next time I
eat my do it. Well, you think about like Anthony Hansen, you know, Anthony got hobbled by a hip it was like a mystery injury too, that we all kind of jumped in to try to help him out when he was in a thing. So it's a pretty amazing community that we have.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You okay?
Yeah, he's back up and running. I'll see him this weekend, but it was kind of like a pinched nerve thing that was just kind of a mystery pain that all of a sudden he goes from, you know, virile, strong bike riding Anthony to like this trip up, which, you know, I'm certainly not in as good a shape as Anthony, but I always like to think that I could do whatever I wanted. But this has been kind of a wake up call.
Well, I understand. I always have perfect vision. Suddenly, I have to have reading glasses.
Oh,
really? See you clearly through this? I can see you. It's not like I don't know you're there.
Right. Well, that the computer work.
Exactly.
Right. I think it's Will. It sounds like him. How long can you sit at the computer at one stretch? Like working, do you lose yourself in it, or do you have to force breaks?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I can sit there for hours and not even think about it, really.
Yeah.
And then once I realize I've been leaning on one arm and, you know, sitting in a position, my back is out.
You
know,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, I need to move.
Or Dana walks up behind you and is like, honey, that looks the same.
Yeah, well, she'll say, I mean, don't just, you have to stop sitting where you're sitting.
Yeah.
And get up and move around.
Yeah, I could imagine you could work and rework and rework your imagery. That seems like a spiral that I'd easily fall down if I were doing that work.
Yeah, it's one of a few things. I'm obsessive enough. It's one of a few things that will keep me from manically pacing around and just finding other things to do.
Yeah.
I'll kind of lock in and you kind of rework something over and over. Like,
right.
Whatever the feeling is, that's balance. You know.
Yeah, I feel lucky with what I do because I've separated it into, you know, the collage is one part, prepping the panel is one part, going and doing the line work is one part, and then going back in and doing the shading. So once I'm done with each step, I won't let myself go back and rework it. Like, if I'm putting faces into my work, then a lot of times I'll either want it to be like a very specific nod to something or then like an everyman kind of thing. And I've got a piece in my truck right now that the one person is not an everyman. I'm like, maybe I should rework it. And Susie's like, yeah, leave that alone. You know, you're going to make yourself miserable. So,
well, you know, as I've changed my process, a lot of times what I'm doing these days is I'm taking paper with paint and other things and printing on that, and then I'm tearing it up, and then I'm collaging it physically.
Yeah.
And so anything to keep it fresh, both for me and for the people who are copying me.
Try to stay ahead of the curve.
I have a whole club out there these days.
But. Oh, man. Well, you know, you were one of the first, I guess. So they're not copycats, Daryl. You created a movement.
Exactly.
I talked to David Bjerstrom about that. He's got a tribute artist that's down to his panels and you know, even the clay boards that he's using to set his booth up. It's a tough situation to be in.
Yes, it's really challenging initially. It's funny. It bothered me so much the first couple of people who I don't mean people who have a similar look. I mean people
sure.
pretty well saying, "Oh, he did a bull. Let's do a bull. He did this."
Right.
You know, and trying to copy the style too. It so bothered me initially that I reached out to a copyright attorney.
Okay.
You know, the guy is a serious attorney who that's his specialty. And he said, "Well, he said you have a pretty good case." He said, "But does he have enough money to pay? I mean, what's his house?" And it's like, I'm not going to get involved in trying to take somebody's house.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I kind of let it go after that. It's like, okay, it'll work out.
Right.
I'm just not going to be involved in something like that.
Yeah. And I found anything from, you know, anything that gets you off of your game is going to really hurt your sales. You know, anything that if you see somebody that's a copycat, if you get into an argument on the phone, I remember getting in an argument and having a really bad conversation, and I'm back behind my booth. Here's Bayou City again, but I'm back behind my booth. I'm just kicking my boxes around and I'm super angry at, you know, myself and the call and everything, and I don't want to be there anymore. And I hear this voice. It's Tim Hooper, Mr. Hooper. And he's like, "Hey, man, are you okay?" And I'm like, I look over and he's like, "When you get bummed out, just think about Paul Lind." And then he closes his booth flap and he goes back into his booth. And I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? Paul Lind? And I'm like, I go from that to like thinking about Uncle Arthur and Bewitched and Hollywood Squares. And I'm like, I'm thinking about Paul Lind. And I started laughing. I'm putting my boxes and I hear his voice in my ear again. He goes, "You're doing it, aren't you? You're thinking about Paul Lind." And I was. I commissioned him to do a little painting of one of his portraits, and I got him to do Paul Lind. It says visualize Paul Lind. So that's part of my Zen approach.
Yeah. Well, you know, Tim was one. He's the guy who told me that he had won Best of Show at a show, and he was standing there in front of his booth and get the big ribbon right there to the Best of Show. These two women come by. Looking at the ribbon, looked at his booth, and looked at the ribbon, looked at his booth. He's Best of Show. This crap. He said, "I just looked at him and said, I'm standing right here, you know."
That's amazing. Yeah, I like to throw that stuff back on people too. They're like, "God," or they look at your prices and they're like, "I'm like, oh, I can't afford this shit either. What do you expect?" But anyway, man, Daryl, thank you so much for sitting down with me, and I appreciate you getting into all sorts of stuff. Hey, give my very best to your lovely wife, and good luck with the painting, whether she shows it at art shows or in galleries. I can't wait to see what she comes
thank
out
you.
With.
I'll see you soon.
Yeah.
For having me.
Thank you very much. I'll see you in Park City.
Okay. Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks again, Daryl.
Man, he is a wise man. He sure has so much insight and wisdom. I really enjoyed what you guys talked about.
The thing is that Daryl, I feel like, just kind of knows who he is. He's exactly who he wants to be, and that comes across in his work, and it comes across in his booth, yeah. and how he treats the arts festivals.
I mean, being able to walk away from a career that you invest so much of your life in to go off on something that's more unpredictable, and
yeah,
there's no guarantees.
Absolutely.
When he said it, it served as an example of how to make choices in his choosing of shows and decisions that he makes within his career. I thought that was really kind of an inspirational topic and something I want to start, you know, looking into for myself.
I feel like every single job that I've ever had, I have brought my experiences from that, whether it's bartending or waiting tables to learning the birthday song at cheesy restaurants to art direction. It's been that. So seeing Daryl kind of, I don't know, he takes his career in social work, he parlays that into an arts business, and he brings that kind of zen to it, you know, like Signe and Guinness say, what would Daryl Thetford do?
That's right. You know, I noticed something kind of interesting. At the beginning, we were talking every episode with our guests about jurying, and we thought, well, you know, we want to keep it balanced here. We want to talk about all sorts of topics, but it kind of seems like, you know, everyone brings it up. Our guests bring it up, and it's something on everybody's mind. And this whole topic of jurying is, it's on the forefront for all of us.
No, I agree with you, Douglas, because as soon as you start talking about art shows around the dinner table after the show with your friends, the first thing you want to start talking about is what'd you get?
What did you get into?
Where are you going? When am I going to see you next?
Yeah.
Are you going to be in XYZ? No, I didn't get in, etc.
Right. And the thing that I found kind of interesting in your talk with Daryl was that there really is a subjective quality to it. And it isn't something we have control over. I mean, I'll be the first to admit I get into the sum of the tops, and I don't. I can't consistently say I get into the same shows every single year, and that's good for me. It forces me to circle around the country, to keep that immediacy with collectors so they don't know if they're going to see me next year. I mean, I would go back to the same show every year if you let me. But sure, I don't get the same results. I don't, you know.
If you could just write down in ink exactly what you wanted to do, if you applied to 10 shows and you got 10 shows, and some of us are lucky enough to do that. I'm not. I certainly get my share of rejections and wait lists. And sometimes I think those wait lists are worse than rejections because you sit there in purgatory and you don't know where you're going to go. And you're like, you can send out the pleading email, the squeaky wheels, and be like, do you have a space this week? Please, mister.
I'd really like to do your festival if somebody cancels.
Yeah, it's just, and some people want you to respond, some people don't, and it's tough. But man, by the end of the year, if you have that kind of zen approach and you realize that you're going to have a lot less work than you started with, that's what makes a season.
That's right. Yep. It will be what it will be. We don't have control over everything out there. So we just have to do what we do. Make good work and show up.
Yeah, make good work and show up. That's exactly the point. Hey, who do we have coming up next week?
Next week, I talked to Cindy Lyric.
Man, we've been sitting on this interview for a while.
We have. She sat down and talked to me about her involvement in a lot of big shows. She started at Uptown in Minneapolis, moved to St. Louis, and then ended in Sausalito.
She's like art show Forrest Gump. It's like she's been involved with all of these different, she knows all of the people in all the top shows that you want to do or that we want to do. And she's been there on the front lines for a lot of them as well.
Well, I can tell you, she said after Sausalito, everybody came up to her and said, Cindy, what happened at Sausalito? Cindy, what happened at Sausalito? Cindy, what happened at Sausalito? And she said she would just look at them and smile, but she talks to us about what happened at Sausalito, so you won't want to miss this episode.
Well, I, for one, also cannot wait to hear this whole thing. And Douglas, we will see you in a couple weeks for that interview. Thanks again, everybody.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This podcast is brought to you by the National Association of Independent Artists. The website is naiaartists.org.
Also sponsored by Zapplication. That's zapplication.org. And while you're at it, check out Will's website at willarmstrongart.com and my website at sigrithglass.com.
Be sure to subscribe to this podcast to be notified when we release new episodes.